Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast of Connecting Faith. Programs like this are made possible through the financial support of listeners like you. You can find out more or make a gift by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab on the homepage. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and today we're going to get some practical advice. In fact, we want to give you the opportunity to join in the broadcast here right away and open up the phone lines, because we want to talk today, with this day before the 4th of July, we want to talk about freedom, and particularly about financial freedom. You know, tomorrow we'll celebrate those that sacrificed for our nation, and we might be in situations now where we feel like we're sacrificing, but just trying to make ends meet. We'll get some good practical advice, and you know, it's always good to get advice from a mom, I think, because they know and understand what it takes to keep a house in order and to keep it all going. And we're happy today to welcome back to Connecting Faith Ellie Kay, who is author of at least 14 books, a popular speaker and spokesperson, and a mother of seven, and she's learned a lot about how to make ends meet and how to be financially successful, to be a good steward. One of her best-selling paperback and audiobooks, Heroes at Home, is now in its third printing. It's been distributed to military families around the world, so we'll talk a little bit about military money and the military spouse, some of those things as well. We're happy to welcome Ellie Kay. She's founder of the Shop, Save, and Share seminars and is trademarked as America's Family Financial Expert. And we're just happy to have her on the program with us. Ellie, good morning from the West Coast. Nice to talk with you.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. It's great to be with you today, and thanks for having me on the show again.
You know, we want to, you know, tomorrow, Independence Day, and we're just chatting before the show. I know you have opportunity to spend some time with family. We'll maybe touch a little bit on your good work with the military. But let's talk about freedom. What does freedom mean financially? When you think about freedom and finances, what do you think of?
Well, you know, Neil, the Bible tells us to owe no man except to love. And so when we have financial freedom, that means that we're owing no man. And when you don't have debt, it just opens up new doors in all different kinds of areas. For example, if you want to help someone out who may be hurting in your community and you don't have debt, you have the financial freedom to reach out, to be able to help them. When you have financial freedom in a couple, they're less likely to argue about money. And, you know, when they don't have the burden of debt and trying to pay bills and things like that. So there's a lot of things involved in financial freedom. And one of the best things is the fact that we can have more freedom to be able to help out other people and to let God work through us as an avenue and a vehicle to be able to show his love to others.
Many times we know it, I guess, at various stages in our life where we would like to do something but just don't feel like we're able because of that financial burden, whatever it might be.
Well, that's true. And Neil, you know, sometimes there's some people that are listening to us today that God may be calling to, you know, a radical type of generosity. They may even be led to give away a car here and there or something that seems kind of radical. And I know that in our lives, we have been led to be able to do that and to go ahead and be obedient to do that. Then God provides. And, you know, that's what freedom is all about, is being obedient to biblical aspects of stewardship, so that in turn, God can honor that and can use you to be a blessing to other people.
I wasn't necessarily going to head down that track, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, radical generosity. If, you know, if someone has been prompted, or I mean, we've probably been all have been in situations where there was a real clear prompting from God that we should do something financially, and it would be a sacrifice. But how do we, I guess, know and determine what's right and what to do in those situations?
Well, Neil, I think that it's really important to keep short accounts with God and man so that we can hear God's prompting and his voice when it comes to doing something that may seem radical in the eyes of others. And I think that when we are rightly related in with Christ and we are really trying to listen for his voice, then when we have something that comes up where we're prompted to give money to a certain area, or maybe give away a washer or a dryer or something else, then we can listen to that. We can ask God again, you know, if we want confirmation, and then just step out in obedience. And that is the way that my husband and I, our family, we have seven children, that's the way we have lived our adult lives. And I'm telling you, it's pretty amazing because here on down the road, God has provided for each of our children to be able to go to college with no student loan debt. He has provided for us in a lot of ways, but the really cool thing is that he has allowed us to be a blessing to other people and to see how that radical generosity really works in practicum.
Ellie Kay is America's family financial expert, and she's founded the Shop, Save, and Share seminars. Has written it's 14 or is it more books?
14.
14.
Yeah, I've just signed the contract for my 15th, and well, that'll be coming up.
The debt diet was one that I particularly appreciated, an easy-to-follow plan to shed debt and trim spending. The 60-minute workout was just, I think, her most recent. And we'd love to have you join the broadcast. If you have a question, a financial question today, really on any aspect of caring for your financial situation, you're welcome to join with us at 877-933-2484. We'll give you an opportunity to queue up right away and join the broadcast, 877-933-2484, or you can go online and send your note in that way through email. If you go to our website, faithradionet.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, there's an email link there, and we'd be happy to take your question and your concerns, see if we can give you some good practical free financial advice today. Ellie, I know that your ability to be generous and to be financially free did not happen right away, and you have a little bit of story to tell. Why don't you just give us a little background so that people know that you understand where the situation they might be in as well.
Thanks, Neil, for that, because a lot of times when you hear a financial expert and you're Main Street America, it's kind of hard to connect. And yet with our family, I was a broker for a number of years, and when I married my husband, I got a 3-for-1 deal. I married the world's greatest fighter pilot. He was in the military, and he also had two daughters. But what I also inherited was $40,000 in credit card debt that I actually didn't know about when we got married. And so we spent the first few years struggling tremendously. As a matter of fact, even though he was a captain in the Air Force, there were a couple of weeks there where we did not have enough money for groceries. All of our credit cards were charged to the max. And I kind of did my Scarlett O'Hara thing, and I, put my hands up and I said, "Lord, we're going to do things this way, and neither me nor none of my kin will ever go hungry again." And so God gave me wisdom and knowing how to be able to stretch the value of a dollar. I took all my financial background and put it towards family finance, and within 2.5 years, we had paid off all of that consumer debt, and I'm thankful that I've been able to remain free from consumer debt ever since then. So we had a lot of these principles, a lot of these books that I've written. They were birthed out of necessity and out of a real need that we had early in our marriage.
Was it you really driving that desire to get out of debt, or was there buy-in from everybody, and maybe what encouragement would you give to maybe one member of the family who says, we've got a problem here, we need to do something about it, and maybe the others don't see it that way?
Neil, there were some pretty good resources for us back then. Crown Financial Ministries, Larry Burkett had written quite a few really good books back then. That's what we kind of modeled our financial giving and stewardship after at the time. And also one other thing that happened is that we realized that we were different. I was a born saver, and my husband was a born spender. He had a really good work ethic, but when he was a little kid pulling weeds, his money never saw the inside of his pocket. So he just was spending. And so he had to modify his behavior. But then I had to modify mine, too. I mean, I wouldn't let us go to McDonald's unless it was 99-cent Happy Meal Tuesday, you know. And so I was pretty radical about, you know, being an extreme saver. And so we both had to come into balance. And when we did that, we learned to be able to discuss money issues, to give and take, and to get the wise counsel of others in our community, in our church, that would help us and even hold us accountable if we needed a measure of accountability to break some bad spending habits. And through all of that, we were able to find that financial freedom. And, you know, it doesn't mean we're financially independent. It just means that we're financially free because we do not have that basic consumer debt that a lot of families have.
Tell me a little bit about some of those early conversations. You know, I think we all want to be able to, you know, we know that when it comes to marriage relationships, that money is often a pretty significant issue and potentially a point of contention. So what were those conversations like? Did you set up ground rules? Did you kind of, you know, develop as you went along and say, well, here's how we need to handle this on a regular basis, weekly or monthly or whatever it might be?
Neil, it's funny you should ask that, because my husband and I were just talking about one of those earlier conversations, and it went something like this. I'm looking at my husband. He is standing there with a new VCR in his hands, and I am saying, what on earth did you do? You went to the store, you went to Radio Shack to get batteries, and you came back with a VCR, and we don't even own a television. And he said, but it was a really good deal. It was such a great value, and we may get a television one day. So he went and took that back, needless to say. He was not going to keep that. Those were what some of the earlier conversations were like. And then there were other ones that he would look at. He's folding some socks, helping me, and he sees some holes in the socks. And he's saying, you know, you can buy new socks, and, you know, you don't have to have holes in your socks. And so I had to learn that it's okay, you know, to go buy clothes when your other ones wear out. And he had to learn that you shouldn't spend money that you don't have for things that you don't need. And so that's part of what it was. The other thing was we learned to limit our discussions to 60 minutes. We had very structured discussions where we would talk, okay, what are we going to talk about? We'd decide the topic, and then we'd work through the topic. And then when the timer went off, we'd stop talking. That way we weren't obsessing about money. We weren't talking about it all the time. We weren't arguing about it. We would table that whole discussion to once a week, and that really worked for us, because when we did sit down for that hour, we were motivated to get things done, knowing that we only had an hour, and then we didn't spend the rest of our time worrying about money and obsessing about it.
Just that one little tip could really make a difference for a lot of relationships, I'm sure.
Well, it really can, and, you know, that's what the 60-minute money workout was basically based on, was that idea that if you just spend an hour a week that's constructive, that's purposeful, then you can radically change your finances for the better.
We want to give some practical tips, and we'll make this our hour for the week to offer some financial advice and talk about whatever challenges you might be facing. In just a moment, we'll continue our conversation with Ellie Kay, who's authored 14 books and is a popular speaker and educator when it comes to areas of finances. She's America's Family Financial Expert and been our guest in the past. We're happy to have her on with us again. Founder of the Shop, Save, and Share seminars. And in a moment, we want to talk a little bit about more about financial freedom. What are some of the biggest barriers to financial freedom? We'll get to that in just a minute. You're welcome to join us as well. You are always welcome to join the broadcast. If you have a specific question about finances, we'd be happy to weigh in on it. 877-93-FAITH is the number, 877-933-2484. Some free advice coming up in a minute. Stay tuned. Talking to Ellie Kay today, best-selling author, the founder of the Shop, Save, and Share seminars, and America's Family Financial Expert. As she also has a ministry called Heroes at Home, and we'll talk about that. She's married to Bob Kay, a corporate test pilot and former bomber pilot, stealth fighter pilot, and they have seven children. And you can find out more about their resources and the help available at lek.com. But we're talking today about financial freedom. You know, with Independence Day just around the corner, we're going to talk freedom, and finance is such a key part of it. Let's talk about maybe some of the biggest barriers to financial freedom. I mean, maybe there are things that we obviously know, but it's probably good just to review what things kind of hold us back.
Well, you know, I think that some of the things that hold people back are the idea of putting off the practical implementation of a budget until tomorrow. Now, some people have sat down before and they've figured out a budget and they've decided that they needed to live on one because they needed to get a handle on their finances, and yet they don't really live by it. So I think that is a big deterrent today. And, you know, what's interesting, Neil, is that as I work with a wide variety of people all the way from Main Street, which is the average American family, makes about $58,000 a year, all the way up to wealth management organizations that I have worked alongside. It's not so much how much you have, it's how you manage what you have. Because there are people that are making $800,000 a year that can't make ends meet. And so that tells me that it's all about the management of what you have. And so that's a real barrier, I think, to being able to live in financial freedom is the whole idea that you're not living on a budget.
We always think, well, just a little bit more, and then we could manage, right? But apparently that's not actually the case. And I mean, statistics prove that out too, don't they?
Well, that's true, it's how you manage what you have. And, you know, for these millennials right now, which are people that are, 30 and under, you know, between the ages of around 15 all the way up to 30, that's that millennial generation, this is a generation that has lived through the greatest recession that we have had in modern history, and they are getting a baptism by fire as to what it means to live within your means, because with student loan debts, with unemployment, which is at 14% for millennials right now, unemployment is, with all of these factors that are coming in, they're learning that they have got to do a really good job of managing what they have so that they can have a future of some kind to be able to look forward to.
And it maybe doesn't look as promising in some ways, right, in terms of the kinds of jobs that might be out there. I mean, there's obviously a great deal of competition, and just the maybe the overall wealth that might be have been available a generation ago doesn't seem like it's as readily apparent.
It's not, Neil, and it's especially true for recent college grads and for these millennials. For example, our daughter just graduated from Moody Bible Institute in May, and there's a lot of jobs that she couldn't even apply for until she actually had her degree, because they required a degree in order to apply. And so she's been looking all summer. She's working part-time at P.F. Chang's just to be able to pay her rent, and she's trying to decide what she wants to do and in terms of what kind of a job she can get. And the main problem we have right now with millennials is that they're not getting hired because of lack of experience. And, of course, you know, they're not getting experience because they're not getting hired. So a recommendation for those that are in that situation that may even still be in college is to get as many internships as you can in the summers, maybe even while you're going to school, if you can intern somewhere else that's nearby your school. Those kinds of things are what are going to help you get a job in the future, because they will give you experience, and then oftentimes you are hired out of those internships by the organization that you're working for.
And while we're talking about students, let's talk about one of the questions I want to get to today was how to handle school loans. They're a real drag on many. Well, I mean, you experienced some credit card debt when you got married, but it's a problem whether you're married or not.
Absolutely. And, Neil, you know, for those that are in that situation right now that are having trouble getting employed, of course, you know, student loan debt repayment begins shortly after they graduate from college. And if you don't have a job, or, you know, if you're in the middle of looking for one and you have those student loans that are starting to become due. And, you know, Neil, it's pretty incredible what these kids are having to start to pay back. I mean, they may have student loans that are $600, $700, $800 a month. And that can be the equivalent of a car payment or a good chunk towards rent, you know, or anything else. And so it greatly limits their opportunity because of this student loan debt. So one of the things that I recommend is that you, if you are having trouble, you need to go immediately to your lender. If you have government-subsidized loans, then there are certain programs that you can qualify for. And even if it's a private loan, you can oftentimes, in many cases, by talking to that lender, get some kind of forbearance. And so those programs are out there. They exist for your help to be able to go to get those student loans debts to be manageable, especially if you're not working. So immediately go to your lender and see what you can qualify for and then get that implemented as soon as possible.
If you have the opportunity, do you want to pay them off in one chunk as soon as possible, or do you just do the monthly payment plan?
It depends. I mean, if you have a windfall of some kind, it would be a great idea to get those out of the way to pay them off. But before you do that, you need to make sure that you're managing your other obligations as well. So you don't want to put so much money towards paying off your student loan debts that all of a sudden you can't pay your rent, or if you were out of work, then you're having to charge up on your credit card debt or anything like that. So the goal should be to try to pay down the student loan debts, double up if you get a good job and you can start to pay off that way. Or there are some programs, for example, in some instances, if you go into the reserves with the military, you can get help with those existing student loan debts. There's also some corporate jobs that will help you pay off those debts. There's some volunteer organizations where you can go out with the Peace Corps, with other organizations that in some cases can help towards some of those debts as well. So look for other ways to be able to pay off those student loan debts and pray for the mind of Christ to help direct you to that right resource and to find favor with that right organization to be able to get those debts paid off.
Is there a priority of debts that we ought to pay? I mean, if, you know, if it comes down to it, say, well, I can pay the mortgage this month, or I can pay my student loan bill, or, you know, whatever it might be. How do we determine that? I mean, obviously we want to do all we can, but it seems like many are in a situation where they don't have enough to go around.
Neil, this is a very important area to talk about, and that is if you are between paychecks, or let's say that you have a new job that's going to start, but there's a delay in it starting, and you find yourself with the inability to pay all your bills, it is important to prioritize what bills that you pay first. And what we're looking at basically is which bills, if they go unpaid, will have the greatest negative impact on my credit score. So the very first bill that you always want to pay is your mortgage, because if you're late on that or you miss a payment, then it is going to have a really negative effect on your Fair Isaac credit score, also known as a FICO. So that's the first one. The second one would be a car payment of some kind, a vehicle payment, because that would have the second highest impact. You need to make sure that you pay that on time. And then after that, you're looking at your credit card bills, because those are the ones that will also, if they're late or if they're not paid in full, those are going to have an impact as well. And then, you know, it's really hard to, you know, categorize it this way, but it's the fact, and that is after your credit card bills, then you have utilities, and student loan debt is at the very bottom of the pack in terms of impact towards your overall credit rating. So that's kind of how you should try to prioritize it as you're trying to make ends meet.
Well, we're going to continue in a couple minutes, taking some calls. We got a question from Terry regarding some personal debt. I get to that, and it's some relationship issues that are tied up there as well. We'll get to that. And also want to talk a little bit about when and how parents should continue to invest and assist their children. And also want to spend a little time talking about Heroes at Home as well. That's all coming up here in the next half hour. You're listening to Connecting Faith. And we'd love to have you connect with us. Ellie Kay is America's family financial expert and is here to take your calls today. You have some financial questions just about how you can maybe make that dollar stretch a little farther. She is the founder of the Shop, Save, and Share seminars, so we'll ask for a few tips there as well. And we'd love to hear from you at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. You can press 1 and connect with Grace here. We can get you on the program, and we look forward to talking with you. Or if it's more convenient, you can always go online. It's faithradionet.com. That's our website, faithradionet.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there, and we'll take care of that as well. So looking forward to chatting some more with Ellie Kay in just a moment. She's authored some 14 books. One of the latest, the 60-minute workout. Is it 60-minute financial workout, just 60-minute workout?
What's 60-minute money workout.
Money workout, yes. There, that would make sense. I mean, a 60-minute workout probably wouldn't hurt us either, but the money workout is a great idea as well. And Ellie's wife and mother, seven children, and speaks from a rich experience and has some good insight for us yet to come. So stay tuned for more with Ellie Kay here on Connecting Faith, 877-933-2484. Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith, and I wish you a great day tomorrow, celebrating Independence Day. We want to talk about being independent financially and what that looks like, and if it's more challenging today than it has been, and getting some clear advice today from America's Family Financial Expert, Ellie Kay, best-selling author, founder of the Shop, Save, and Share seminars, and one of her latest books called The 60-Minute Money Workout. And you can join us with your questions at 877-933-2484. And Ellie, I want to ask this question, that's one I'm sure that you probably get a lot. Terry is checking in, and she has an online question. She said, been married for 20 years, and so my husband has dug in his heels and will not give up DirecTV nor the $250 smartphone bill each month. So we have debt that's been stressing us out, but there's not any wiggle room for giving things up for a time to make debt manageable. So what do you suggest?
Well, Terry, I'm sorry about your situation, and it is tough in a marital relationship when one member wants to give everything that it takes to get out of debt, to be able to get out from under that load that is just so burdensome in a lot of situations. And so her husband won't give up DirecTV or the $250 smartphone bill. And I think, Terry, that now is the time for you to plug into some kind of Christian counseling and let the counselor give him that hard word. So oftentimes we just don't hear the truth from our spouse as to what the reality of the situation is and how it's having such a negative impact on our lives and how that is just going to continue in the future and greatly limit our opportunities in the future. So I would suggest you can go to crown.org, you can go to Financial Peace University, and in both of those cases there are churches that are affiliates and that partner with these Christian financial organizations, and you can set up an appointment for counseling to where you can sit down and let the counselor give that hard word. And I think in that case, it may have a greater impact on your husband than you strongly suggesting to him that he give those things up.
Yeah, which was, I know we know what that euphemism was, the strong suggestion, but
you caught that. Okay.
Well, what kinds of things did you give up? I mean, it's easy for those luxuries to become necessities, you know, whether cell phones or cable or whatever it might be. There's some reward, though, for giving things up in the short term, isn't it?
Neil, there is. And, you know, a lot of times what my husband and I, what we did was we just said, okay, for a season, we're going to do things this way. We didn't look at it as, okay, we're going to give this up, we have to give this up, that kind of thing, because, you know, it's kind of a negative mind game that you put on yourself. So we actually did without two cars. We sold one of our cars, paid off some debt with that, and became a one-car family. Now, we were living on base, and my husband, no kidding, would get on his bicycle in his little flight suit and a backpack where his, you know, he put his helmet in there, and he would ride the 2 miles on base over to the squadron where he worked. And then other times we would coordinate the vehicle if he needed it that day and I was going to be home without a car. We did that for 2 years, and it was so worth it because it got us back on our feet. And our attitude was not, we're giving this up. Our attitude was, we have a greater goal. You know, we're adventurers. We're tough people. We can rise to this challenge. And when we get on the other end of this, there's going to be success. There's going to be victory, and it's going to be totally worth it.
You know, I'm wondering, do we need to maybe change our attitude a little bit about that to be willing to say, hey, we can rise to this challenge? I mean, are we sort of pre-programmed by marketing or whatever to say, well, you know, we can't get out of this. This is hopeless, or we're helpless?
I think so, Neil. I think, you know, it would be a good idea to go back and watch reruns of Little House on the Prairie. I mean, or, you know, hey, here's something that's even more radical than that. Go on a missions trip to a third world country. Go down to Mexico. Go over to Haiti. Let's go see, from America's perspective, what the rest of the world lives like, because even the person in America who has a high debt load, who is living in what we would consider meager means, is wealthy compared to 90% of the rest of the world. So I think it is about perspective, and I think it is important to take a few steps back and to say, okay, you know, what has my attitude been towards this? Am I grateful for what I really do have? And, you know, can I rise to the challenge? And you can. You know, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. So let's start to put that into practice and see the incredible, wonderful things that God can do in your life when you take him at his word and you rise to that challenge.
Ellie Kay is America's Family Financial Expert, best-selling author, founder of the Shop, Save, and Share Seminars, and one of her latest books called The 60-Minute Money Workout, and we're inviting you to join with us with a financial question or two or a comment, 877-933-2484. Let's go to Lisa from Princeton, and she has a tip or two. Lisa, go ahead. You're on with Ellie Kay.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I love the show. And Ellie Kay, we've read your books, and they've been very helpful. I wish we would have read them before we took out student loans for our kids. We took out Parent Plus loans for our kids because it just worked out better that way, that otherwise they couldn't get loans. And then they went into forbearance while they were in school. And I guess the one advice I'd give is to the parents, if you do have Parent Plus loans, is to pay that interest while they're in school, because they just accumulated more that they had to pay off when they came out of forbearance. And I just feel heavy-hearted that they had such big student loans anyways that it made it worse. And we could have done better in paying for that, I guess, and I wish I would have now. So I'm grateful, you know, those loans are in our name. They're paying them off. I said, we'll take them out if you pay them off, and they have been. One son had over $80,000. The other son had over $60,000. And now they're down to $10,000 and $15,000. And I'm so grateful, because I don't know how, if they couldn't have paid for them, I don't know how we could have. But we'd have made it, I'm sure. But I guess that would be my advice, is to pay the interest while they're in school so that they don't have as big a burden when they get out.
Good word. Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate you listening. And Ellie, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Lisa, you know, I appreciate Lisa's candor and her transparency and calling and letting other people know, look, this is the way that we did it. We really wish we had done some things differently. And, you know, here's my advice that's birthed out of the incredible challenge of adversity. And so I think I really applaud Lisa for calling in and for sharing in such a transparent manner. One of the things I do advise parents such as Lisa and her family is that to really minimize that student loan debt, I have a whole file that if people are interested in, they can call and ask for the College Crunch file. And that talks about how we were able to put all of our kids through college debt-free with at least a bachelor's degree, and a couple are going on and getting master's degrees. And the way we were able to do that was a wide variety of creative ideas. And in some cases, they were kind of difficult. It's not like we wrote a check for, you know, $200,000 for one education or anything like that. We helped financially, but they did work-study programs, they did scholarships, they did CLEP testing. One of them took a year off of college between sophomore and junior years from Columbia University and worked that entire year to kind of get caught up. Another went into the military and had the military pay for it. So there were some kind of out-of-the-box radical ways that we paid for some of those, but then there are other kids of ours that went through conventional schools, and they chose the school based on their ability to graduate with minimum student loan debt. One child got accepted to the University of Texas, Texas Christian University, and then Syracuse University, and UT was the one school that he could graduate from with no student loan debt, and so that's what he chose. And now he's 25, he's married, and he has all kinds of financial freedom because he has no student loan debt, no consumer debt, no automobile debt, because he's kind of learned in a way that has granted him a really nice future. So I would encourage people to contact me and ask for that college crunch file, and then we can send it to him free of charge.
LEK.com, is that the best way to connect?
Yes, you can just go to the website LEK.com, and there's an online contact form. Just put College Crunch in the subject line and let me know that you heard us here on Neil's show.
That'd be great. Thanks, Ellie. Appreciate that. You know, we talked a little bit about the parents. Talk about when and how parents should continue to invest and assist their children. I mean, we talked about the millennials, unemployment at 14%. You know, we want to, you know, we want our kids to, and they want to be out on their own as well, but we want to help them out. So are there some guidelines, some balance there?
Neil, right now we are basically looking at a generation of millennials, and they're being parented by boomer generations and Generation X. These are the people that have young adult and even older adult children that they're reaching in, and they're helping them through a lot of financial difficulty that they have right now. And one of the things that is typical of millennial parents is that the parents that are parenting that generation is that they're called helicopter parents. And this is a tendency for us to hover over them, not let them make any mistakes, bail them out of bad decisions when it comes to finances. And that is an approach that is really one that will limit their opportunities to be able to stand on their own two feet. So here's my philosophy that I encourage other people to follow. And that is, you tell your adult child, I love you, and my love for you is completely 100% unconditional. But my money is conditional. And there is nothing wrong with that, Neil. When it comes to our money, we are not obligated to bail them out of student loan debt. We are not obligated to pay their mortgage payment so that they won't have their house repossessed, because in the first place, they bought a house that we told them they couldn't afford, and now they're paying the consequences of that. And what's happening is there's a lot of parents that are leveraging and jeopardizing their own retirement to bail young adult children out of bad financial decisions that they made on their own. So there's a real balance there. And if we are going to put our money towards these adult children, then there has to be some boundaries associated with that. If I'm going to help pay their car payment until they can find a job, then they're going to show me their budget plan, and they have to have accountability for the money that I'm giving them. Now, I'm going to love them unconditionally. I can give them birthday money. There's no condition on that birthday money or Christmas money. But if I am reaching in and making payments for them, whether it's for college or for consumer debt or for a house payment, then I have the right to demand an accounting, as any good steward would, for that investment that I am putting towards their lives.
Well, you just said, even as you were getting out of debt, you and Bob, that you did it for a season. So is there, you know, I guess we put time limits on too, perhaps, if we are going to help, that there's not only some accountability, but some time limits.
Absolutely, Neil. And, you know, let's talk specifically for those boomerang kids that are living back at home again. If they're living at home, then there has to be an exit strategy in place. And they have to be looking for work, and they have to have a certain number of things that are going on. And we develop a very specific and strategic exit strategy. Part of the exit strategy is they, once they get a job, even if it's a part-time job, they begin to pay rent to the parents for room and board. Now, here's something that's kind of sneaky that you can do as parents. If you're getting, you know, $300 or $400 from that adult child that is now living in your home, if you want to, you can take a portion of that or all of that and put it in a savings account for them so that when they are ready to exit the nest, they'll have enough money for the first and last month's rent and for a deposit to be able to live on their own. So, you know, that's one idea. You could just take it and put it towards your own expenses, but you could put part of that in an account for them. But it gets them used to paying rent, and you can't make that nest comfortable. You got to put a few pine cones in that nest so that they'll want to get out, because I don't think it was ever part of a healthy family plan, parent for adult children to live off of their parents when they're in their 20s and 30s and beyond.
Ellie Kay is America's Family Financial Expert, best-selling author. She's written some 14 books, including The Debt Diet, which is an easy-to-follow plan to shed debt and trim spending. One of her latest, called The 60-Minute Money Workout. Got 14 or so books. You can find out more on her website, LAK.com. Or you can connect with us on our website and send in a question via email by going to faithradionet.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can email your question. We have one about cash versus credit and bank cards. We'll get to that in a minute. Or you can call us at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And good financial advice today from Ellie Kay here on Connecting Faith. Before the hour, my guest is Ellie Kay today on Connecting Faith. Ellie's best-selling author and the founder of Shop, Save, and Share Seminars. She is America's Family Financial Expert, and we're talking today about how to be financially free. I also want to talk a little bit about Heroes at Home. It's another passion and a ministry that she has. But Ellie, I have a question about, someone wants to know about your opinion on carrying cash or paying with cash versus a credit card or bank card.
It really depends upon the situation. When we were trying to get out of all of that consumer debt, we set up envelope system, and an envelope system would have cash in it for gasoline, for groceries, for entertainment. And that was a very practical way of us seeing that cash dwindle for that particular pay period and realizing, hey, you know, we need to slow down on going out to eat because we're running out of money here, or, you know, we need to eat more of the things in the pantry, in our cupboards, instead of going to a grocery store because we're coming to the end of that allotted amount of money. So that's a good way to use cash. On the other hand, using cash for things that you may need some type of a receipt or proof for that would actually provide another measure of warranty would not be a good idea. Let me give you an example. There are some credit cards that you can use when you're paying for electronics or certain items, and it doubles the amount of warranty on that item, and it gives you an extra measure of protection when you're buying things that way. Also, if there's any contest over whether those goods were delivered or not, then you have a paper trail to go back to. So those are the two kind of philosophies when it comes to carrying around cash or using a credit card or debit.
Hey, you mentioned warranties. Are you a fan of extended warranties in general, or are there specific situations that where they're useful?
Neil, the rule of thumb on extended warranties is don't, but there are some exceptions. For example, if you use your computer extensively in work and it is an essential part of your life to be able to get your work done, then, you know, buy that extended warranty. For example, AppleCare. I just made the big switch into a MacBook Pro book myself, bought that AppleCare because it's totally worth it, because my livelihood is dependent on having a computer that works. So in that kind of case, it could be worth it. If you're a commuter and you're putting an extensive amount of miles on your vehicle, then getting an extended warranty for a vehicle that could be expensive to maintain in the long run, and you're, once again, your work is dependent upon that, then in that case, it could be a good idea. But when it comes to a lot of these other appliances and electronics and things like that, an extended warranty is just a way for them to make a little bit extra money, and it would probably be a good idea to just pass on that.
Before, we want to spend some time talking about Heroes at Home before we wrap up, but any your favorite tip maybe this week on Shop, Save, and Share, or just maybe your best financial piece of advice here as we head into the 4th of July?
Certainly. You know, I think that one of the best tips that I have right now is to be able to extend your vacation dollar and your entertainment dollar by going to sites that specialize in those areas. For example, restaurant.com, right now with the right code, they are running a sale on their $25 gift certificates for only $2 a piece at the restaurant that you might like in your area, or where, even where you're traveling to. And then another really good area that where you can find some good values right now is by going to TripTik, which is a AAA app, and that will actually help you plot the most efficient route that you have. If you put in your year, make, and model of your car, then it'll compute where you're going to spend on gas, and it'll show you the least expensive gas stations along the way. You can also, if you don't have a smartphone or the ability to download an app, you can go to fuelcostcalculator.com. So these are all things that can help us during the holidays as we travel places, as we eat out, and as we have fun with our families.
Good word. Well, Ellie, let's spend some time talking about Heroes at Home. That's been printed many times, been distributed to military and families around the world. I know that's close to your heart, and we just want to honor you for the great work you're doing there. But talk about Heroes at Home, and maybe just a word about how we can honor our men and women that are serving today as we head into the 4th of July.
I really appreciate you talking about the military families, Neil, because it really is important that we support them. And when you find out that someone serves in the military, I'm sure many of the people that are listening right now will say thank you for your service. And don't stop doing that. Sometimes we may not get the reaction we expect, or we may think, oh, they hear this all the time. Well, they don't necessarily. You'd be surprised at how many military members that I talk to as I literally travel the world speaking to the military that don't hear this. So don't cease in doing that good thing. The other thing, too, is that when you hear of a family member that has someone that is serving, so you may run across parents who have a child in the military, or you may have someone who has a spouse that's serving, or even parents that are serving, thank them for being a hero at home, because that's what they are. It is the family members that are holding things together while their military member is deployed into harm's way. It is those family members that are contributing to our nation's defense as well, because if they're okay and their community is taking care of them, then that military member is not as distracted by, well, is my wife okay? What about the kids? Or are they going to be able to have the car fixed and the lawn taken care of and all the things that they may worry about in regards to their spouse? If they're not worried about them, then they can focus on their mission. When they have more focus, then there's less accidents. And when there are fewer accidents, then there's less loss of life. So if you're listening to me today, by contributing to and supporting the military families in your community, you are actually contributing to the preservation of life overseas. As we tell those military members, we got your back. We're going to take care of your family while you're gone serving our country.
Did it make a difference for you when Bob was in active duty? You're living on base for part of the time. Is it different than being on base versus just in a guard or reserve setting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is completely night and day. And that's one of the things that I've really expanded on in this new edition of Heroes at Home, and that is the reserve and guard component. I've been doing a lot of work lately with Yellow Ribbon, and a lot of people are not even aware of the fact that they have this incredible benefit of being able to attend a Yellow Ribbon reintegration and a pre-deployment type of conference. And what these family members do is they go to these conferences. They're in beautiful places like Orlando, San Diego, and they are informed as to how they can cope with those separations. I give financial workshops there, too, so they can learn about a wide variety of things, and they get to spend time with their family members before they deploy, and then once again they qualify for a second conference that they can go to with that military member after that military member gets back. And parents can go if they have a child that's serving in the military, because whoever is your support system, that's who you bring to these Yellow Ribbon conferences. So for more information on that, you can just go to yellowribbon.mil. And if you know someone that is in the reserve or guard component, tell them about this, you know, a wonderful program that may be the best kept secret in some cases if they're not aware of it.
It's one thing to be married to a stealth fighter pilot. It's another thing to have one of your sons in the military. How does that, is that a different a set of feelings and concerns for you?
Yes, Neil. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine whose husband is a two-star general, and she has a son that now flies fighters. And I asked her, I said, is it me or is it, you know, is it really harder to send a child off into harm's way than it is a spouse? And she said that she absolutely believed that it's so much harder to send a child off. And so for those that are parents right now that have children in the military, we really commend you, and we support you and thank you for the contribution that you're making in sending your baby off sometimes into harm's way. And so it's important to support these parents as well and to thank them for raising a child that cares enough about his country to be part of the 1%. Because, Neil, right now there is 1% of our nation's population that protect the freedoms of the other 99% of us.
Ellie, thank you on behalf of Bob and your family for your service to our country and for the good work you've done with Heroes at Home. And, of course, for the great insight you provided us today here as we talk financial freedom. And we wish you a wonderful 4th of July celebration with your family. It's been good to catch up with you again.
Well, thanks, Neil, for having me on the show. And thank you for this wonderful program that you have. And you have so many wonderful listeners as well. And just thank you for the good work that you are doing on such a consistent basis and the difference that you're making in the lives of those who listen.
You can find out more about Ellie Kay, all her books, and the Shop, Save, and Share seminars and all that information. Heroes at Home as well. Go to our website, elliek.com, elliek.com. We post the show up on our website as well on podcast, and we'll have that up shortly this afternoon. Thanks for listening.